You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Hello, this is Faye. I am accompanied by Napoleon Wilson and Rollo in the live stream. And it is Sunday, the 11th February of 2018. And I did a big mistake earlier. I was talking about 1.5 hours about the logic of psyops, which is my topic on the Wikipedia. And I presented everything and was really satisfied. And when I left, Napoleon told me that I was muted, so I have to try again. And I was thinking to postpone it, but I have to start my week tomorrow with this work done. So I am going to try it again. And I hope, yeah, you can ask me if you are in the Discord server. On the Discord server, you can write questions if you have or whatever. Or you can join so that we can discuss afterwards. So, firstly, I'm repeating very fast what I said in the first presentation. I call it like that. It's not something big, but I have no better words, you know. The topic is, how did we come from propaganda in the 15th century to strategic communications? And in the 21st century, and we work in this psychological community, we work a lot with the term PSYOP, which means psychological operation. The PSYOP was replaced by the official military apparatus and also the NATO commanders in 2010, and they call it now MISO, that means management information, strategic operations, something like that. But this is not important. Important is how did we come from the control of the information in the hands of the church to these dispositifs that we have today in East and West, and what can we learn from an excurs in these centuries and the evolution of or progress of technologies and sciences and theories, etc. And that was the ambition that I had. And so I started in the 15th century, and I talked the other day about the invention of the linear perspective, which was a precondition for any kind of representational relation between two things. So if you want to reproduce one thing with a mechanical way, you have to have the exact dimensions, as we say today, but this had to be produced. And I do it fast track for the first centuries because I talked about it the other day. The progress or in the print with the printing press and all the newspapers that saw the light of this earth in England and in the United States. They were not United States at those times. In the continental Europe and Australia, we passed through industrial revolution in the British homeland, where the mechanization of the production took place, and we saw that photography and telegraph and several other technical apparatuses were produced in the late 19th century, culminating, as I saw in the dictionary today, culminating in the kinetoscope, which is the earliest motion picture device. That is also really mechanical, so you have to move it with your hand, and it has a relay where it transfers each picture. And if you look into a hole on the top of that machine, you can see the moving. It is an impression. It is an imagination of movement. There is no movement. The movement is only in the mind when you produce it. So we saw that. And for our central topic, that is, I repeat it in other words, the influence. It is the influence on the public sphere, the influence of the people. And for this, we had seen that the church had produced the term propaganda, and they had institutionalized it in order to professionalize their communication, as we would say today. So it was already a template, it was already, it had a meaning, it had, they had their instruments, they had all this... this era with people that went to other continents and were propagating the truths of the Catholic Church, etc. But we see now in the late 18th, no, sorry, in the late 19th century, and concretely in the United States, after the independence wars, they constituted the United States of America. In 1980, in the United States, Ivy Lee founded the Council, the Public Relations Council. That is not the Council on Foreign Relations, that is really the Public Relations Council, and it has to do with public relations. And what is the meaning of that? In the United States, because they had a strong, let's say, relation to transports, imports, exports, as they were a newly evolving society, they understood or implemented the term propaganda in the commercial sector and not in the military sector. So they had already, very early in 1982, they had founded the American Psychological Association, which, among others, were studying already the effects of advertisement on the human psyche and many other things. Very well known is also The Psychology of the Masses of Gustave Le Bon. And if you go to the page on the Wikipedia under this topic and find the link next to Gustave Le Bon, all his books are in the public sphere, can be downloaded and read on the, I think it's on the Gutenberg Project. Okay, so now we are in the beginning of the 20th century, and we have already a split of understanding of the term influence of the public sphere. In the Free West, quote-unquote, in the United States and in the British mainland, homeland or mainland, I'm not sure, it runs in the sector of commercial, of market, of advertising, and they are evolving it also in that sector, while in the continental European mainland, after the institutionalization of the nation states, propaganda becomes a term that is attributed to the military apparatus. That has, I believe, it has really these historical reasons for that difference. And yes, because we had already in the European mainland, we had the French Revolution and the Enlightenment, where the term propaganda was negatively, from the Enlightenment, it was negatively occupied, because with this term they were criticizing the clerical propaganda and the church propaganda, and they wanted to secularize knowledge and all the societal institutions. And after the declaration of the several nation states in the 19th century, I think we can say that the term propaganda remained or stayed always in this dialectical form in that part of the West. It could be used positive, it could be used negative, but it was also very strong as a meaning. So propaganda could not be used for selling toothpaste. But in the American Free West, it could be used for selling toothpaste, because it didn't run under that understanding, under that context. It were running under the context, as I said, commercial advertising, and it evolved really very fast. I would like to mention some of the, in my understanding, someone else maybe sees it otherwise, important points in this time. It was, first of all, the interpretation of dreams of Sigmund Freud that was published in 1905, I think, but he worked on it 1900. And of course, it has a previous time where he already was working and already had theorized all these concepts about the subconscious and the conscious and the ego. And one could say, okay, this is interesting, but why does it affect psyops and deception? Because in the theory of the subconscious and the Freudian psychoanalysis is the rationalization of segments of human capacities or human traits, which of course are not dead after he rationalized them, but the theory of it and the concept of it makes it usable for technologies, makes it applicable to concepts of concretely advertisement or public relations, or later political public relations. It is really not to underestimate the participation and the responsibility of the psychoanalytic theory in all this paradigm of technological media is absolutely important. Very fast now, we have Marconi, 1901, who sends a radio message across the Atlantic. So we have, now we leave the organic world of the naval forces of the British Empire that go around the planet or the plane or the convex or whatever thing, and conquer the continents and bring back the spices from the Indian continent to the homeland, and we enter the sphere of the symbolic powers. And the first radio message across the Atlantic means nothing faster had existed till that moment. The fastest you had were, I think, 3 months with some of the very good frigates of the British kings or something. That was very important, and if one takes a look really in the production of theories and all, of course, is now scientific, because the scientific paradigm was already created after Descartes. That was already in the 15th century, but now we have the institutions of it. We have the institutionalization of this sector in the society that produces knowledge that is scientific, that can be used in the production of real material machines, that can reproduce things. It's the so-called age of representational media. And one very important part of all this is, of course, psychology. And as psychologists, it is for us very important, because psychology is the main part of psychological operations. Without psychology, it doesn't work. So I will mention one or two other things of that paradigm, and that is one is the Chicago School of Thought, of psychological thought, and the director, I think he was Hugo Münsterberg. I'm not sure, he was of German origin, but I think he spent all his lifetime in America. He was a German, it's only the name. 1908, you see I have real trouble with the numbers. Hugo Münsterberg publishes On the Witness Stand, Essays on Psychology and Crime, that opens up a whole category of criminalization, which is, of course, one part of the psychological paradigm. They created the institutions of psychiatry, which were used in the beginnings, at least. They were mostly used to segregate parts of the society that were not adaptable to the new rules, the new parameters. And Hugo Münsterberg publishes 1913 The Psychology, no, not that, I put it there, Psychology and Industrial Efficiency. The industrialization factor we had seen already in the late 19th century. The steam machine and the steel processing were the main factors for that, and now we have psychology and psychological thought catching up with industrialization. Some of these elements we had seen also already in the United States in the late 19th century with Frederick Taylor. Everyone has heard the term Taylorism. That was the guy who, in simple words, saw that all the workers in a workshop or in a primitive industrial plant were doing all the stuff from A to Z. And he said, why? We can split it, we can split the modules of the production so that we can become efficient, more efficient. And this is the beginning of scientific management in the industrial sector. And then it has another push with a psychological adaptation of this pattern. And what does that mean? It means that the material technology, as it evolves, produces also enables the analyzing and the understanding of the human psyche and the human being as part of the machine that's already in there. It's implemented in all these psychological theories. Now there comes... Oh...
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Okay, that was a good break, because now comes a point which, from my understanding, is not really explicable. It is the 1914 assassination of Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo. If one looks at this progress of thought, or let's say science, as it is called, In the past 100 years, thoughts, sciences, technologies, machines, apparatuses, representational devices, photography, moving images, it's somehow like a hell is going on. I forgot to say that in 1911 already we have the foundation of IBM, International Business Machines, who jump into the field of all these technologies. And then we have 1914, the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, which was, as I learned in the psychological community, probably a psyop, but it is also inexplicable why it had at all to take place, because it doesn't make any sense. It makes for me sense as a distraction from all the technological progress that is taking place in mainly in the United States. And maybe we could ask someone who is really good in that part of historical knowledge of events to interpret it. I will continue, though, with the inventions that have to do with the universe of the symbolic technologies, or technologies based on symbolic thoughts. It's also technology, you know, because since we enter the universe of the symbolic, everything is technology. It's techne, art, and symbol. Symbolic, but very important in this timeline is the 1916 publishing of the course in general linguistics of Ferdinand de Saussure. Ferdinand de Saussure was Swiss. I didn't know it. I learned it now when I was researching him again. He was in Paris, though, where he produced this knowledge, and he was actually investigating the natural languages of humans. That means English, Spanish, Chinese, or something. But he, after many years of work, and through this course in general linguistics, he established an abstract theory of linguistics. That means a theory which does not handle or interpret only languages that exist really in nature, but that are abstract. So he created, for example, the terms significat and significant, which means the abstract element which is included in a word. When you say tree, you don't mean this concrete tree, you mean tree as a category of thought. That's so simply translated the meaning of this dyadic or digital model of science, which is, of course, so important, because without that, how would you apply it on human language or on any other device? It had to become digital also for the natural languages, so that it can be translated into electrical impulses, which could create the device with which later the computer processors work. I'm lost a little bit in all these events. I would like to mention one more event of the first so-called World War, which in fact was one big war from the whole first half of the 20th century was one big war, one technological race. But we know in the psychological community that there was later a space race also, but we didn't have the term space till the First World War. This does not mean nobody had used the word. It means there was no paradigm, there was no understanding of such thing like space. It was a side effect. The term was a side effect, and also the sciences that became related to that term later. It was a side effect of the Battle of Verdun, which took place 1916 in the hills north of Verdun-sur-Meuse in northeastern France. And this battle, I think there are many documentaries also about it on BBC, on the mainstream media, etc. It was one of the very large battles, very deadly battles, and very terrible battles. The main reason for that was because in this battle, for the first time, the Germans used chemical gas. So that changed completely the frame of combatant actions in because previously, all the frame that we had was ballistic. So you had at least the last 400 years after the invention of the gunpowder, etc. But in this battle, the paradigm changes and becomes from ballistic. It becomes environmental. The attack does not mean the body of the enemy. The one who is attacked is not the body, the bodily substance of the enemy, the machines or the human corpses, but it is the environment, it is the air, it is the space. So this understanding of the environmental war was also leads later to the understanding of space as a military thing that could be occupied or gained, or which you could win if you have make a race for it. But it created also the environmental movement and the understanding of environment as it became much later, for example, the Green Movement or the climate change denial movement is also in this paradigm of thought. But it was not possible earlier, because earlier we had only a ballistic understanding of the world. I mean, the military, not the normal people. There were also other understandings of the world, but they did not produce books and sciences and weapons, so they are not in this list. We have, yes, I try to go back to the main topic and to connect again with the understanding of the influence on the public sphere, the influence on the people, which is the aim of propaganda, and which was previously, as we saw, till the institutionalization of nation states and the free United States of America, they were under the control of the church. And quickly after entering the 20th century and with this otherwise inexplicable First World War, except it is for the destruction for the technological progress that is made in the United States, we have also a split of this understanding of propaganda per se. We saw that in the United States it was from the beginning was a commercialized advertisement-related term, and they tried to create the necessary instruments to evolve it. And in the mainland of Europe, we have 1917, the October Revolution, which produces then a completely different template of influencing the public, which is the centralized control of the Communist Party. And the West, the Free West, attributes now the term propaganda only to the unfree communist states or whatever, authoritarian states, and keeps for himself or occupies for himself the so-called free information, which of course is not free, but we have to see how it re-enters the military paradigm, although it is obviously not integrated in the military paradigm. I will mention some points here which I think are of interest for the quote-unquote evolution of propaganda and psychological operations. We have 1920, Lenin publishes the thesis on production propaganda. So we see, because we do not have in the West much knowledge about what does the communist paradigm produce, we know what they manifest or materially produce. They produced also films. They had their own studios, the Stalinist communist studios that produced up starting, I think, in the 30s. In the West, we have Hollywood, which was institutionalized between 1910 and 1920, and which is seemingly, as we know, it is seemingly completely independent from any kind of propaganda through this century. Only some maybe specialists who have analyzed, for example, Hollywood productions in the Depression era or productions in the Cold War era, they have come to conclusions that it never really was really independent and free, but always it had connections. It is not obvious. It is not obvious as it is in the totalitarian communist states. 1922 began the BBC broadcasting radio, of course, because television was created 1925, invented, not created, by John Lowe Gilbert. Would be interesting to know if he was a sim. And as of the theory of the whole, we see how important it is, because it's not that you just can make some newspapers and then you write we are the good ones and the other ones are the bad ones and then win the war. You have to be professional, and professionalization and all this scientific paradigm produced really so much in that century. It's amazing. 1922, Walter Lippmann publishes Public Opinion. Everything can be found in the public sphere. It is under the commons and you can download everything. Harold Laswell, which is well known in the American public, publishes Propaganda Technique in the World War. an evaluation of the First World War, the so-called First World War. Then we have Ivan Pavlov, 1927. He investigates an investigation on the physiological activity of the cerebral cortex. I have read the book. I cannot now go in depth because it is a long time ago that I read it. But it is in the main points, it is an experimental psychology. It does real experiments with animals and concretely with dogs. Pavlov's dog comes from there, which is later to become a very nice band, I think in the 70s of the last century. So he does experiments with dogs and with impulses to get results if the dogs are programmable. So I remember one experiment was that if you have every time when they become, when they get something to eat, when they get food, if you put on a red light, then if you put on the red light, they think they get food. That's a simple association, but of course it had to be proven. And he proved it, but he widened the sphere of his results to the humans. And one can talk a lot about it. I just want to mention it. Edouard Bernays publishes 1928 the famous Propaganda. Is one of his main works. I didn't know that Edouard Bernays is also the father of the term psychological warfare. I found that now during my searching during several documents. And what is going on now, we have seen the splitting is complete in the Free West, that means mainly in the United States, and we can say maybe in the Anglo-American Empire. It is not clear since after the long wars. It is not clear. Afterwards, it is a little more clear, but it's not really institutionalized. It's just an informal term. But in the Free West, we have the commercial template and the progress of the public relations sciences and political consulting firms and all this stuff. And without being very publicly known, exactly in this time, in the 30s and in the 40s, the biggest progresses are done in the field of the digital technologies. 1932, Konrad Zuse begins with the construction of the program-controlled computer, the Z1. Alan Turing undertakes the first efforts to structure a machine that can be used to solve mathematical and logical problems. And 1938, Claude Shannon applies the Boolean algebra to the dual system and to electronic circuits. That means from that moment it is clear that with zero and one you can affect matter. And that is the whole thing with the digital technologies. The translation between, for example, a thought or whatever to a material process which runs autonomous. And that is done. That means already, and we see it already, 1944, IBM produces the computer Mark I. There is a link where one can see how big this computer is and why it would be impossible to put this computer in serial production. It had to be more more economic with the space, relating the space, so it had to be more smaller, and for that the processor had to be smaller, and the smaller processors came later, and it had also to be producible from, so you had to have the industry also running that can produce the elements of that. These were only prototypes that had to be serialized and became serialized later. So we finish, let's say, with the first half of the 20th century, which I think symbolically ends 1945 with the propaganda psyops of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which, if one looks at this timeline, and it is much really more, really much, much more than I now mentioned or than is written down in page on the Wikipedia, but if one goes through these two centuries of technological progress, it is really, for me, it is really understandable that this whole thing with the wars was mainly a destruction, so that the enemies do not know that these technologies are going to come and coming. And also it becomes very, very obvious that Hiroshima, Nagasaki, I mean, that there is no time to produce two technologies parallel. It is a complete other Liga of thought and template of thought, and the nuclear so-called sciences are completely underdeveloped at that time. That was the whole thing is a propaganda from the starting, from the beginning, just to come out of the wars as the victorious part of this confrontation, and to keep the technologies under the control of the free West, which, as we know, is not so free. Thanks for listening, if you are listening, and I'm going to see now if there is anyone in the live stream and if anyone wants to talk about this. If not, and because I'm feeling really tired, because it's the second time that I tried today with this presentation, I would leave for now, and we will see another time again.
Hi, this is Late Night with Kay, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.